Just behave yourselves and act like men.
Now you start using your head! That's not love! That's 3 feet above your ass!
People will come, Ray.
Alright, don't try to strike everybody out. Strikeouts are boring. Besides that, they're fascist.
We don't stink right now.
You play ball like a girl!
You're out of here!
There's no crying in baseball!
High fly ball into right field. She is gone!
This is West Coast Bias.
Dynamite drop in, Monty. That broadcast school has really paid off.
Good evening, and welcome back.
Yes, this is not a drill. We are really here. You are not just hearing things. This is West Coast Bias Podcast. That is what you're listening to. I am Samuel Paul.
I am Adam Nelson.
And here we are back. Much later than anticipated, a much belated Happy New Year to a season that almost wasn't, kind of was. It was late going, but not as late as we were getting this podcast out to you. I hope that you're still out there listening. We do appreciate all of the listens, downloads, likes, comments. All of that good stuff.
Salacious emails as well.
Salacious emails. Oh, I can't wait to get into that a little bit later. But
oh no, that's just that's for my personal fun. But please continue.
Here we are. We haven't talked since the end of last year.
Is that true? And you know what? That's all ancient history.
It really is. And it is all ancient history. Yet
we are looking forward.
We are. Yeah.
And guess what? There's baseball.
There is baseball, and that is the best news possible.
We are back. Thank you for joining us once again. Remember to email us at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Well, you know, we're just going to get right into it because there's a lot going on. I think I know who's going to win the home run derby this year.
Oh, yeah? Who's that?
Maybe the polar bear?
Oh, well.
Is this guy juicing?
I don't know. Maybe he's just getting all of the juiced balls because it's New York.
It was in L.A. I'm talking about Mets game Saturday night against the Dodgers.
It's still a New York team. He's going to get all the juiced balls.
This guy, is that what it is?
I think so. I don't know. I'm enjoying it. I've got the polar bear on my fantasy league.
That was weird, wild stuff.
I've got a lot of home run hitters
well, if you were watching that game, it was a little suspect. Now, I like Pete Alonso. Okay, I've had him on my fantasy teams in the past. He brought energy back to the home run derby, the likes of which we haven't really seen since Cespedes. I think he's dope, but the home runs he got off the Dodgers Saturday night were insane, to say the least. I mean, he's hitting balls way outside the zone, end of his bat, flicking his wrist at them, and they're going out dead center. Unbelievable. He hit two. Now, obviously, as a Dodger fan, I'm a bit salty. The fact that he hit two.
So you think this was a preview of the home run hitting contest because the All-Star game is finally in L.A. after a couple season delay?
100%. It's a preview of what's to come. Now, again, I mean, I've never seen he won the last two, right? He's the first back-to-back winner.
I think since that, yeah.
The way he was hitting them in the real game, it's his to lose. So,
okay,
just putting that out there. All I don't want to, no conspiracy theories here.
Yeah, bet on that at your own risk.
And yeah, I'm sure if you have him on your fantasy team, you are extremely happy. But there's been a big difference between April and May. I don't know if you've noticed this.
I have noticed it. It is the tale of two months. Could it be the tale of two balls? There is a lot of controversy around the end of April, beginning of May, about the baseballs and the way that they were performing, feeling in the hands of the players.
Yeah.
We still got this baseball controversy that they may be using more than one, maybe even more than three balls this year.
Three.
And we also now, this is the first year of the universal humidor storage for the balls.
I think that's what I've been suspecting has been the biggest culprit for a lot of this. But
well, how does that explain the fact that the balls are feeling mushy? Some of the balls are feeling mushy in the hands, that they can feel some sort of separation between the core of the baseball and the leather skin.
Well, that's the extra moisture, right? I mean, wouldn't that do it?
Well, but is it not in every place? And in some places, the humidor will cause the ball to dry out more.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking. As summer,
and that's the thing. If all of the balls are being stored in a standard humidor throughout the stadium, once they pull it out of there, all the balls will have the same relative moisture content, in regardless theory of where they are. So if you're in a really humid place in the Midwest on the East Coast, the ball is going to feel a little bit drier than it otherwise would be, because the humidor will be less humid than the outside air. While it's in dry places, notably Colorado and Arizona, but most places on the West Coast tend to be drier than those east of the Mississippi in terms of relative humidity. So those balls will be heavier and have a little bit more moisture compared to the atmosphere at the ballpark that they're being played at.
Do you think we'll be seeing, as the temperatures increase and the humidity increases, more of that disparity? And or will the balls be flying again?
Well, it seems like it seems to be sporadic. You go from game to game, and seems like, you know, depending on who's playing, the balls can be jumping one night, very next night in the same place, same teams, the ball isn't jumping. So I don't know what the answer is. We'll just have to watch baseball, so know what we all are here and see kind of what happens. It's but it has been very strange. It's very strange to see a product that should be as consistent as this baseball.
Because now we know with StatCast, we understand if it's a certain launch angle and it's a certain bat speed, exit velocity,
right,
it's almost a guaranteed home run. There was a ball against Bellinger hit against the Giants,
and
109 off the bat, perfect angle, and it died short of the track. Like, it was strange.
Yeah.
It was very weird.
It is very strange. It's something that, you know, assuming that it is possible to do math to prove the ballistics that if ball is traveling at a certain speed at a certain angle, it's going to go a particular distance.
And when it doesn't,
there's something wrong there. There's another force at work that, you know, a variable that we do not know and cannot put into that equation to make the math work on those occasions. It's very strange to see, and I don't like it. And I think that it's something that should be taken care of. I mean, for so long, the ball has been consistent at the very least within a single year, if not from year to year for decades on end.
That's how it seemed. But I think you're right. It does seem like they're maybe peppering different balls in and mixing them up, kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's also a lot, well, at least in the beginning, the first month of the season, there were a lot more guys getting hit And there were a lot of pitchers complaining about, you know, they couldn't get the right feel.
Right. It was too slick. It was too lumpy. There's a couple different complaints at it. And the Mets, Pete Alonso's team, they got plunked a record time, like 22 times in the first couple weeks of the season. Were they being thrown at? I don't know. Maybe they just got...
A little early in the season to be... Throwing at guys.
Yeah, especially, we had an abbreviated spring training because of the aforementioned lockout. And so, there's guys are still getting used to throwing and throwing with purpose behind it, like it matters, because it does. We're not in spring training. We're playing for reals and in a week that would otherwise be part of the spring training. And these guys are so used to a particular training regimen that, you know, that third week of throwing spring training got pushed into the regular season. And maybe that had something to do with the wildness of it all.
Perhaps that is true. It's whatever it's been doing for the Mets, it's been working, because the Mets are on fire. Speaking of the Mets and the Dodgers on Saturday, Dodgers retire number 14, Gil Hodges.
Gil Hodges.
Legendary Dodgers first baseman Gil Hodges had his number retired at Dodger Stadium on Saturday before the Dodgers played the Mets, and that's significant. Well, let's get into it. Playing 16 seasons. With the boys in blue, Hodges is now the 11th player to have his number forever enshrined in Dodger history. He was finally voted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame last December when the Hall of Fame's Golden Days era panel ended the 52-year wait. This was long overdue.
You know, it's incredible that something like that can happen. But I guess, you know, we're seeing some modern equivalents of that.
I mean, he was one of the most feared hitters in baseball, and easily one of the best, if not the best, first baseman of the 1950s. Actually, between 1949 and 1959 with the Dodgers, he averaged 30 home runs per season. I mean, in an era when virtually nobody was doing that, even the modern era, averaging, it's insane.
And in the annals of baseball, when you think of the Hall of Fame, you think of names that everyone instantly recognizes,
right?
And Gil Hodges is one of those names.
100%. He had, through the 1950s, he had the second most home runs and RBIs, over 1,000 RBIs in that decade. He also won Gold Gloves for the first 3 years of their inception, 57 through 59, as well as winning the first World Series for the Brooklyn Dodgers and the first World Series for the LA Dodgers, 55, 59, respectfully. He became a Met in 1962, after they selected him in the expansion draft. That was toward the end of his playing career. The Mets retired his number in 1973, that is, of course, the year after he died. He died young, heart attack, 42, I think he was. And just 3 years after he led those miracle Mets as manager to a damn near impossible 100-win season, and then ultimately the Mets World Series title in 69. He became the first player in Mets franchise history to enter the Mets Hall of Fame, and his number was the second retired. Was it Casey Stengel, I believe, was the first, because, you know, the longtime Mets manager. Sure. So, you know, he still holds great admiration in both Mets and Dodger fans' minds and hearts. It's pretty cool day. They did that yesterday with the Mets and the Dodgers on the field. You know, that was awesome. That was really cool to see. Finally, you know, jeez, get him in, you know. I think his wife is still alive. She's 99.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Hang in there. At least one more year.
Yeah.
So are you saying with the story that the people who are in charge of inducting people into the Hall of Fame have always had a tough time getting it right?
Yeah, you know.
And so if you're a one Barry Lamar Bonds, you shouldn't fret too much because he's not the first to be slighted like this.
I award you no points.
I think, yeah. I mean, him and Clemens, of course. You know, Bonds and Clemens are obviously the greatest examples of that. They're both first ballot Hall of Famers, easily. But, you know, there's a big but there. Sir Mix-a-Lot approved. It's the same thing. Like if Altuve goes on to, you know, hit 300 the rest of his career and get, you know, over 300-400 home runs, which he won't, and he won't.
3,500, 4,000 hits. But even if he did, you know,
would he be a Hall of Famer? No. No, get that guy. Although Altuve is, I think, way worse than, you know, what Bonds did. Bonds, you know, I don't know. He's a victim of circumstance. I don't know. Probably not, but, you know. But Bonds was doing it before. We don't know if Altuve or Bregman or Correa, we don't know if these guys ever could. I mean, you know, I don't want to get into that. I mean, I don't want to get into that.
Cheating is cheating, no matter how you cheat,
and
right?
And, like, their whole careers. Like, we don't know how far back it goes, is what I'm saying. Because they all came up together, right? So, but anyway.
Right. Wow.
Yeah, no, I don't. Yeah, the Baseball Hall of Fame has it's a silly thing. It's so I, you know, the team's Hall of Fames seem to make the most sense, and when you, especially when you retire a number, you know, there's only 11 Dodger numbers, you know, that are retired,
right?
And every team in baseball has a Dodger number retired as well, which is actually pretty cool. Of course, number 42.
Yeah. What about Fernando?
Yeah.
Are they going to be retiring that number?
I don't think so.
That guy was really, really good.
I know. And I think just for the Mexican heritage, they should. You know, he was great for when he was great.
Yeah.
But again, there's only 11 guys in Dodger history. I mean, you know how many Dodger legends there have been?
Oh, yeah.
It's just insane. It's very, very few numbers up there. For a, you know, century plus old team. So, well, I guess, does that go back to Brooklyn? I don't know how that works.
Yeah, it'd go back to Brooklyn.
Yeah, so yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, yeah, obviously Jackie. Obviously. Yeah. Now, the 2023 schedule, since, you know, there's been a lot of talk about
2023 this. Schedule. Here we are schedule. At the beginning of June, and we're talking about 2023.
Ooh,
okay.
Your ideas are intriguing to me, and I wish to subscribe to your newsletter.
Because they're cutting back on rivalry games.
Well, yeah, so they give a universal DH, and now they're going to just make one homogenous mess.
NBA style. Yeah.
Of the two different leagues. Is there going to be a American and National League? Or is it just going to be
every
the
team,
MLB and that's it?
Yeah, every team will play every team. Essentially, you know.
An equal amount? Are we going to get a home and away?
No, not an equal amount. Okay, here's a breakdown. There'll be 56 division games. Okay, clubs play all four teams in the division 14 times. The current total is 19.
Right.
So that means 1 3-game series and 1 4-game series each, both home and road. Other 10 league opponents, 60 games. Those non-division teams within your league, you'll play them 6 times apiece, 3 at home, 3 on the road. It's currently 6 or 7 apiece. The interleague game schedule will be 46. It's just, you know, I know why, all right? Revenue. Dodgers go to Kauffman Stadium in Kansas
Money.
City. Yeah,
it's gonna draw more than the average opponent that the Royals would face otherwise.
You know, and they're trying to, you know, make it work so like every team plays its interleague rival, which, you know, do those really exist? I don't, you know, like Mets, Yankees, Cubs, White Sox. Maybe Cubs, White Sox.
It does in certain areas, but not. Every team has a natural geographic rival.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, you know, you got the Angels and you got the Dodgers. You got the Giants and A's for now. You've got
Cubs, White Sox.
You've got Cubs, White Sox. You've got the Yankees, Mets, and then I mean, maybe you get Marlins and Tampa.
Okay.
At one point you had the Astros and the Rangers, but then the Astros switched the leagues, so that doesn't necessarily work anymore.
No more Montreal.
There's no more Montreal. So the rest that you kind of have to sort of like force
some sort of rival.
I mean, maybe it would make sense like San Diego and Seattle, because you have the extreme northern west coast with the extreme southern west coast. You can maybe but it's still, I mean, it's there's really no history between those teams to really constitute any sort of rivalry. Rivalries develop naturally and over time, and very rarely does it exist sort of naturally because you're in the same general area.
Yeah, I think it exists more in like football, like Raider fans versus Niner fans, like that. I feel like there's a lot more animosity and rivalry there, even though, again, same, you know, different conference,
well,
whatever,
yeah, and then,
than like A's and Giants, you know. Nobody really, I mean, I know like when they play it's like kind of cool. I don't really get, like, because like, I grew up with the Freeway Series and it wasn't that big of a deal.
Some people are way more into it than others. I remember back before 1989, there used to be pretty common to see a person wearing a hat that was split down the middle. Was black and orange SF on one side and yellow and green A's on the other side. And it was weird. And some people liked it, some people not. But then after 1989, you didn't see those too much anymore. Because that the World Series,
then, yeah. Everybody was an A's fan at that
point. It became much more split and much more of a rivalry, having that history behind there, not just geographic proximity, but we've met in the World Series,
right?
And now, you know, it's like, I really don't like the A's, you know, or I really don't like the Giants now because of that. And there are some fans that are way more into that rivalry than others. Does it matter to the players? Probably not. But I can't speak to that.
Yeah. I'm not, I mean, it's just kind of like a very underwhelming
premise.
Yeah. And it's our future. And it's the future.
Yeah.
And I it guess seems that's just like, going to be like that. I guess it, it's just going to make the World Series less meaningful.
Less special. And same with the All-Star Game.
Exactly.
I mean, it used to be that the World Series or the All-Star Game was the only time you're going to get to see these players that are really good for these other teams play against a team that you potentially care about.
Yeah, the novelty won't be as
Novelty won't be there, and then we'll probably end up with, you know, I mean, the NBA still has like an East and a West conference, you know, but it matters less and less, and as the teams play each other more in a more balanced schedule, I suppose, that we're just going to end up with one homogenous league. It's going to be the MLB. The top 12 teams make it to the postseason tournament, and they get shuffled around because of just seeding, record and seeding, or they're going to keep them separate just to make the sorting a little bit easier. Or are they going to, you know, make just one league?
This is blasphemy.
Yeah, I don't like it. You know, I say that, although I always complain about going to AT&T or Oracle Park, whatever the hell it's called now, in San Francisco to watch Dodger games. And I always liked when the Dodgers came to Oakland. They only came like once every 5 years. So even though I'm complaining now, I'll probably end up being happy about it in a personal sense, that I can see the Dodgers more living up here in San Francisco.
Will you though?
No, well, not
those,
more. But a different option. I can go to Oakland. I can go to the Coliseum. I prefer the Coliseum. I like.
You're
the
not
Coliseum.
Surrounded by so many Giants fans.
By the way, whenever the Dodgers do play the Giants, it's about 40-60. Sometimes 50-50, and it
has been that way in recent years, and I don't like that. There's way too much blue. At Oracle Park.
I got my tickets for June 12th. I'll be there with bells on. Well, last time I was there, I literally had the bell because I had my shame bell shaming the Astros.
And they almost kicked you out because of it.
Yeah, that is true. So I guess, you know, I'll try to look at the silver lining and say I can go to the Oakland Coliseum while it lasts to see the Dodgers. I actually went to the Coliseum last week. Because I know nobody's going, so I figured, hey, what the hell,
yeah,
you know?
No one's going. Yes, we may get into that a little bit later, but...
Well, I went on a game that really nobody cared. It was the Texas Rangers versus Oakland A's.
There's probably more cats there than fans in the stands, huh?
Yum, 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 yum.
There was about 8,400 people. Okay. But I gotta say, it was great. Because I had, like, five whole sections to myself. So if a foul ball came anywhere near me...
Did a foul ball come anywhere near
you? It did not.
Okay.
It did not. I don't know how. I mean, literally not one foul ball
in the
right... It must
be your magnetic personality.
It's crazy. Everybody was hitting them to the left field. Yeah. But needless to say, I did not get a foul ball. But it was, it was nice. No lines. And I gotta say, they actually upgraded their concession stands, and the food options were... much better. Now, I brought my own food because historically the food there has been subpar. But the beer selection was on point.
Yeah.
Got to give them that.
Now, I did hear one, I don't know if it was a troll or anything, but beginning of April, a fan took a picture and tweeted a picture of a beer that was... made for the A's for consumption in Oakland at the Coliseum. It was a microbrew, local, green and gold on a can.
Yeah.
And on the bottom, it said "Viva Las Vegas."
Oh, damn! Wow.
So
a portent of. What's to come?
It's possible. There seems, I don't know how serious it really is, but there's definitely a lot of chatter surrounding possible A's move to Las Vegas. They've got a beautiful facility down there for their minor league affiliate in Las Vegas.
But they would need a full stadium. They're not. You know,
they would need a full stadium, but they could probably expand on what they have to make it. A full stadium, and the way that the A's are drawing anyway, you know, who knows how much they would actually draw in Las Vegas, but
right, and it would have to be an indoor. They'd have to have a roof,
enclose it somehow.
Right.
Sure,
I mean, and I know there are a lot of deep pockets and virtually a well of money in Las Vegas.
There's some pretty deep pockets who already own the A's.
Right.
Any sort of talk about, oh, we can't afford these players, oh, we can't afford a new stadium in Oakland, is absolute rubbish. This guy who owns the A's is one of the richest men in the world. Don't even talk to me about not being able to afford something.
And I think that's why the fans are upset.
And that is exactly why the fans are upset and not going to see this ultimately bad baseball team this year. They really aren't very good. Is anyone watching them? Because, like, their attendance...
What, am I chopped liver? I just told you I was there.
Well, yeah, only
yeah, no,
once.
Know,
it's not
know,
like you're
know,
going,
it's
like,
sad.
every day.
It's true.
And there's been a smattering of people that show up, sure, but... You know, they don't really have a radio presence here in the Bay Area. So not even on the radio. You have to have cable to watch them because of the blackout rules. You can't stream them if you're in the Bay Area.
Yeah,
it's
brutal.
So you have to go to the Coliseum, which is a dump. And it's overrun by stray cats and possums. I feel bad for A's fans, and I understand why they're not going to the games, and I feel bad that there's no real way to consume the baseball without giving money to one of the already richest men in the world who won't spend money on the team to make it at least watchable given the circumstance.
Now, I can think of one way that they could perhaps bring back fans, if not just for a game or two, because there have been sightings of Big Sexy.
So you think that if our show favorite,
one Bartolo Colon,
who says that he wants to go back to the Mets, because to the A's to play, that would bring a crowd.
Hey, I'm trying. All right.
I like where your head at. But yes, for those who haven't heard, Bartolo Colon is actively working out and has been working out hard to try to earn a fresh opportunity to join a major league ball club at, what is he now, like 48?
You know, I don't even know if he knows. But it doesn't matter because he's possible. Ageless. He's timeless.
He really is ageless and timeless. But he says that he does want to go back to the Mets. Who knows if he'd take an offer from another team?
Hey, look, there's a universal DH now. I mean, even though he has that, he hit that amazing home run with the Mets.
Yeah.
I believe that was in San Diego, of all places, too. So they wouldn't have to worry about that. You know, he could still go six. I'm sure he never had a problem going late into games. And nowadays there's a premium for pitchers who could do that. He's got a rubber arm.
It would seem so.
Or a T-Rex arm, however you want to look at it. It's unbreakable.
I'm looking at this picture right now, of the video of him throwing a catch, and his arm looks pretty good. It's big, it's toned, you know, it looks pretty strong. So, it's not just throwing a wet noodle out there is what I'm saying.
And he never was, you know, let's just get him back. Hey, you know, next year the Mets will come to Oakland, I'm sure, at some point. So, you know, there we go.
Yeah. Sure.
You know, I don't want to be negative, because, you know, it's been very light, but I do believe that you have some statistics on negative tweets. Is this
negative
how
tweets?
Does this pertain to MLB?
Well, so a website called betonline.ag, which I believe is Argentina, but analyzed all of the negative tweets concerning Major League Baseball players to try to determine who is the most disliked player.
How do they do that? They have like a robot quantifying or
probably they run some sort of search algorithm looking for MLB and player hashtags, and
I would imagine like 90% of tweets are negative anyway. Right?
Well, yes, but not.
It's a powerful computer.
But that being the case, even still, a specifically negative comment directed at a particular player.
All
right. You know, this is based on just the first 2 months of. Almost month and a half of this Major League Baseball season. So just
now, I would imagine
2022.
It's like Harper is always up on that list.
Harper is up there, but he is not number one.
I think he's been pretty quiet lately.
Divisive.
You know?
He plays the villain,
and he's doing his job.
He is.
He had a couple years there where he was hitting 240, 249, and yeah, okay, you know, he's supposed to be the golden boy, this and that.
He finished strong last year. He's gotten off to a decent start this year.
So you're saying it's not Harper is
it's
number
not,
one?
No. Really? No.
Manfred? Oh, he doesn't count.
No, he doesn't count because he's not a player. He would be probably the most hated man and most disliked man in MLB, player or not. But I don't know. That's not the scope of this particular search. No, a person that we have talked about many times on this podcast in relation to a particular prediction and or bet that was made. Former Dodger, current Padre, Manny Machado.
That's right.
Number one on by a fairly decent
now. That's true. You margin. Know, a few years more than
1,500 negative tweets.
That's surprising.
Since the beginning of the season.
I only say that's surprising because he's been crushing it in fantasy, and he's been helping out, I'm sure, scores of thousands of people out there.
Well, again, I imagine fantasy owners aren't necessarily the ones that are sending out these tweets. These are probably more fan reactions. Oh, I hate that guy.
Well, there are a lot of Dodger fans out there, so that makes sense, you know.
With Twitter.
Right.
And Baltimore fans, perhaps.
I don't think they hate him, right? Baltimore probably still has a soft spot for Manny.
Maybe. Who knows? Who knows? But any...
You know, I'm kind of coming around to Manny, too, you know? It's like, you know, the guy's just Mr. Consistent this year, you know? And there's something about that for fantasy that you just... It's hard to bank on. And Manny's been doing that now for a while. This guy's going to finish with 30 home runs and...
He puts up
15 stolen bases. Maybe even 20.
There's absolutely, no matter what you feel about him, there's absolutely no doubt that Manny Machado is a good player and one of the best in the game. Certainly, best 25 in the game. I would where on that list he is, but certainly,
and he's always
been
hated.
Up for debate.
He's always been hated,
and he's always been a not popular player. He's always been a little bit of a villain type of player,
kind of dirty, kind of shady. Yeah.
Yeah,
throwing bats at people,
and, yelling at younger players in the dugout,
right?
Even if it was words of encouragement, who knows?
Yeah. Well, the Padres seem to be doing better without Tatis.
It would seem so, but you know, based on recent overtalked events, you know, it might not have been the problem in that clubhouse.
Yeah, it's like the whole world is turning into the GoldenEye. On N64, slappers only. You remember this? It's
2022 is turning into the year of the slap.
Hoo-ah! Yeah, it's true. It was interesting, but, you know, it's been beaten.
I know.
Beaten to death.
All I know is that since the being named as the commissioner... of the fantasy football league in question, Mike Trout has hit 174, including a 0-for-19 stretch.
Whoa.
Which represents the worst 5 games in Mike Trout's career.
Wow.
So I don't know if that has anything to do with it or not, but that's the case. Manny Machado is still the most disliked player in history, and as it turns out,
How is Altuve or Correa not on this list?
Well, they're on the list.
Okay,
Altuve. Right. Okay. Altuve is actually number 2. Bryce Harper number 3.
Okay,
and Carlos Correa at 5, right behind Max Scherzer.
Shame.
Mike Trout is actually also on this list, surprisingly.
Trout
at number 7, believe it or not.
That's silly. I mean, you know, say what you will about Trout. You can't hate the guy.
He's such a... Yeah. I don't know. Maybe all of those negative tweets were from Tommy Pham about his ability to be commissioner of a fantasy football league. I don't know.
Yeah. No. All right. Well, speaking of people you might want to slap, did you hear? I mean, this happened like a month or two ago, but Joe Buck will no longer be the voice of the World Series.
I did hear that, and...
Do you know who's replacing him? Giants fans are going to love it.
I've not heard I did hear it. It's the radio voice of the Dodgers.
The voice of the Dodgers, Joe Davis, is now the new voice of the World Series. He's also like the head Fox baseball guy now too, because he was calling that Phillies game earlier this week and not calling the Dodgers home game. I was like, what the hell is going on here? You know,
there definitely could be worse choices made for that.
He's got a great voice. I mean, the guy's young. You know, I mean, he's young for a sportscaster, but he's very well accomplished. It's going to be great.
He worked with one of the all-time best, if not the all-time best, as well. So,
well, he sort of. I mean, he replaced Vin Scully, although
he didn't work with him. We're in a couple of overlap years there.
Nobody worked with Vin. Vin was a one man.
I know he was a one man band, but he.
He came in. I mean, maybe he was doing grunt work or something behind the scenes. I don't know. I mean, he's young, you know. He's born in 89 or 87 or 88 or something. But he's done a lot though since, and you know, it was hard for every Dodger fan out there to accept anybody. That wouldn't have mattered who filled in the shoes. And it was almost better that it was sort of an unrecognizable name. Like let him grow, kind of like how Vin was, you know, let him grow with the team. But it is strange. I do feel a bit of like a, you know, like we have an open relationship now, because when he's calling games that the Dodgers aren't even playing in, it's a little weird for me. But it'll be nice, especially when the Dodgers win the pennant and they're in the World Series. It'll be like a home game every night. That'll be pretty cool. I do like that.
Yes, and we'll see how well that he can contain his bias towards the team and call a fair game.
Well, he has the greatest model to lead himself after, Vin Scully, who never used the word we, or you know, never got excited when there was, you know, the Dodgers took the lead or anything. You know, it was always very, very even keel. Sometimes to my chagrin, I'm like, all right, Vin, you know, come on, give him, you know, give him a look. Sometimes he would not sometimes he would almost always talk about, you know, the other team as much as the Dodgers, if not more so.
And that's
which
a mark,
great,
that's
which is amazing.
It's a mark of a good broadcaster, because there's always something to talk about, and you can talk about the other team, get some info, get some perspective on the game, on the players that are playing the game.
Yeah.
Tells a story, and that's what the job is to tell the story of the action that's happening on the field in real time.
Yeah, like when, I mean, I remember when he was telling the story of Madison Bumgarner killing a rattlesnake near his pregnant wife and then pulling out a still live baby rabbit from his stomach. I don't know why I still remember that. It was just in the middle of a game. And
that's a pretty, awesome. Striking. And now he's pitching for the snakes. So, you know,
let's get a little bit more close to home. Now, if you're a fan of Joe Buck, fret not, because he will be doing Monday Night Football for ESPN. He is no longer affiliated with Fox. He will be ESPN with Troy Aikman. I really don't care. That's fine. He's out. He's been doing it since 2000, though, Joe Buck.
I know. He's been the voice of Major League Baseball for a long time.
Quite some time now.
21 years.
Yeah.
But no more, and that's fine. I'll be glad to hear a different voice, even if it is the Dodgers' voice.
Now, did you see Goldschmidt's May? We're talking, of course, about Cardinals.
Well, yes, because the during that stretch, the Cardinals played the Giants 7 games. So yes, I saw Goldschmidt's May. It was pretty impressive, and that guy has been good for a long time. But I'm glad that he's finally found his bat again in St. Louis.
I mean, he wasn't just good; he had possibly the greatest May in St. Louis Cardinals history, which is a very, very long and old storied franchise. Let me just give you his triple slash line here: 404, 471, 817. It's good for a 1.288 OPS in the month of May. 42 hits, 23 extra base hits, 10 homers, 33 RBIs. It's just, it's unbelievable. You know, is this the Goldschmidt of old? Is this the Arizona Goldschmidt that was on his on a one-way ticket to the Hall of Fame? I mean,
it would certainly seem so. He found him old self again. He had a couple of shaky years, but I think he feels more comfortable in his new surroundings. that says a lot for a player. But
I mean, he was going in the third, fourth, fifth rounds for fantasy leagues.
Oh yeah,
this year, and now he's bona fide. I don't know if he's a first rounder because he doesn't really steal anymore. But I mean, if he keeps hitting like this, 100%.
Yeah, no, I mean he's always just absolutely just killed the Giants throughout his career. Most notably,
well, Dodgers too. Yeah.
Most notably, Tim Lincecum. He just ate him up for lunch.
Oh really?
Oh. It seemed to always be bad news if he came up with Timmy on the mound, but
like Bauer versus Machado. Now, obscure stat expert Jason Stark of The Athletic could find only one other calendar month by any Cardinal that included a .390 average with at least 10 home runs and 22 extra base hits, and you may have heard of him. His name was Stan the Man Musial.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that name once or twice.
1954. And again, he only hit .390, .486, .772 only.
Only.
With 11 homers and 22 extra base hits. But, I mean, you know, this guy is hitting .400 for the month of May and getting the homers. It's kind of unreal.
It really is.
It's... unlike, I should say, Juan Soto, who, you know, in our fantasy league, we have a very extended stat sheet for ours. We do 10 by 10 as opposed to 5 by 5, which I love, and it's Roto. So Juan Soto in our league is actually still like in the top 20 for hitters, even though he's, you know, his batting average right now is leaving a lot to be desired. But he's still walking a lot. He's still, you know, he's still getting home runs. I mean, he had two on Saturday.
And he's still 23 years old.
He's batting .232. .232.
Yeah.
What the hell's going on here?
Well, but the league average is not much more than that.
I know. So, but
and the offense across the board is down. I mean, this is what we talked about a little bit. At the top of the show.
It's true. But so I'm trying to figure this out. I hope he's not doing a Joey Votto thing where he's just trying to sell out for home runs. I mean, again, he's still Juan Soto. He's still crushing it. You know, he has 12 home runs already this season, which is, I think, might be... I think he's on pace for maybe like his best season, which was 2019, the year of the happy fun ball when he hit 34. But, I mean, he's a career .293 hitter. I just always expect Soto to be hitting .300. And so it's really strange that, you know, I mean, he's, you know, for easy first-round pick to be hitting under .250. I mean, I know it'll balance out. Oh, I'm hoping it will. But, you know, he's still, you know, walking as much as he strikes out, and he's still a solid guy. But it led me to wonder what's going on, because I know he hits them all over the field, right? Juan Soto isn't just a pull hitter. He hits them wherever he needs to hit them, right? He follows the pitches. And so Eno Saris of The Athletic did a great deep dive on opposite field hits. And opposite field fly ball rate to home runs. And, you know, as you can imagine, obviously when you pull the ball, you're going to hit more home runs than if you hit it oppo. But since 2019, of course, the year of, you know, the blitz ball, homers per fly ball are down over 20% on pulled balls. They're down 45% on opposite field fly balls. Now, it's pretty much common sense, obviously, that barreling a pulled ball is going to generally give a batter more power due to higher bat speed, you know, exit velocity. Well, sure. Simply due to the fact that the, you know, the ball is coming in contact with the bat in front of the plate, right, quicker. In the StatCast era, the slugging percentage on pulled barrels was 3.299, and on opposite field barrels, it was 2.467. This year, the opposite field barrels is 2.056. You know, it's good, but not as good as pulling it.
One of the things that, comes to mind for me all the years I've been watching games, one of the common themes amongst hitters, especially coming out of a slump, is that there's usually a comment made that, it's always a good sign when this player starts hitting them out opposite field, and showing that he's got a swing back, that he's timing him up, that it's a sign that he's going to be coming out of the slump. More often than not, that is that seems to be true. Now that's just very anecdotal. I'm aware of that, but it seems to be maybe the league is just in a slump, and once they start hitting opposite field home runs again, we'll see an overall increase in offensive production.
Well, yeah, because, you know, I think a lot of people are maybe wondering why players in their fantasy leagues don't seem to be hitting for power, even though they're still hitting for decent average, you know, and
does it have anything to do with the shift and the general philosophy of going the all or nothing? You swing for launch angle, swing for the fences, and don't worry about striking out.
Well, you know, like Joey Votto is like, he's recently quoted as saying, he's like, I only want to pull the ball. I only, you know, I'm only trying to pull the ball.
Right. And Barry Bonds famously said that pretty much as well, that he's not going to try to go opposite field. His swing is to pull it.
Right. And opposite field generally means maybe you, I guess it can mean a few things. Like, you know, you're obviously waiting for the ball to get closer to you to get a better read on it. But then you obviously still have the bat speed to be able to make good contact with that ball. But the power just isn't going to be there. And so the opposite fly ball rate leaders, as you can imagine, aren't really necessarily guys that hit a lot of home runs. Actually, number one is Miles Straw. Number two is DJ LeMahieu. And then Ryan McMahon for Colorado. And Brendan Rodgers, who's actually really heating up lately. But then you see guys a little bit lower down, like Will Myers. You know, and Will Myers stands out because he's added more to his opposite field fly ball rate than anyone else on the list. And this is a very big problem for him because his OBP is so bad. It's so low. And, you know, if you don't have good plate discipline and you're only hitting it, or not only, but hitting it oppo, I mean, he's hitting it oppo 59.4% of the time. It's just not going to be good for you. So pretty much guys on this list, you might want to, if you could sell them, if for fantasy purposes, you probably should, unless they can maybe figure it out. I mean, Mark Canna's on this list too, but his at least his on-base is a little bit better, you know, so he's still doing okay. But let me see, like 10th on this list here, 11th is Freddie Freeman. And that's kind of scary, you know, because as a Dodger fan, obviously, it's like, is he going to go back to the Freddie Freeman of like, you know, 2017, where he's like hitting 18 to 20 home runs, still hitting 300, because Freddie Freeman's average is great right now. He's still hitting really well, but his power is definitely noticeably down. And
well, could that, you know, be partly going from Atlanta, the third highest park in MLB, and famously a place where home runs can be hit.
To a
Dodger Stadium that is generally less of a hitter friendly park than Atlanta has historically been.
Possibly. But his 41, you know, he's currently hitting 41% better than league average. So, you know, it's not time to freak out. But he also owns the worst isolated slugging percentage of his career. So, I mean, maybe that has something to do with it, but it's just because he's hitting it opposite field 55% of the time. Now, that's great for the shift. You know, that's great for when you're just trying to loop one into, you know, short or shallow, I guess it'd be left field for him. But when you're, you know, talking about power, and he's, you know, he's supposed to be like, he's the first baseman.
Right. You know, traditionally a power hitting position.
Yeah, he's currently only pulling 6.6% of his fly balls. I mean, that's almost an impossibly low number. So maybe there's room for regression in that sense, but there's also seemingly room for regression in terms of just his you know, approach to the plate. And maybe we are going to go back to see sort of Freddie Freeman before he was hitting high 20s, 30s home runs, you know. I mean, he'll still probably hit for average, but, you know, it's something that, you know, you might want to look for. I mean, JD Martinez is on this list also, and he's doing fine. So if right. you have the brute strength, it's probably not that big of a deal, but it's still a sign that it's an indicator of something that maybe, but yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe it's just something that he's just trying to get base hits. He's not really trying to sell out, you know, and as a team, that's probably a great thing to be, to have, you know, but yeah. for fantasy, maybe not the best. Nah, I'm not trying to freak right. out on Freddie Freeman, but I saw his name on this list and I was just like, uh-oh. I didn't realize he was oppoing it 55% of the time, man. That's kind of scary. Although, again, JD is doing the same thing. And, you know, although right. he does play in Boston, that little baby park. So that ain't right. Dodger Stadium.
No, it's true. Dodger Stadium is huge. Certainly it's a bigger park than Fenway.
Yeah. <Say the least. laughs> that brings us to this week's Ignoble Award of the Week.
The Ignoble Award. We have a lot of candidates. Or we did. I mean, we can go through a list of Madfred, the owners, the Players Association, everyone involved in kind of the strike. We can talk about
Well, hold that thought before you get into
okay.
This week's Ignoble Award is brought to you by Jim's Abattoir. At Jim's Abattoir, we offer full service solutions for all your butchering needs. Tired of sawing, chopping, skinning, and limbing? Fed up with poking and prodding, honing and boning? Jim's Abattoir offers hands-free options for any size job. Founded in Flint, Michigan in 1967, we have locations in Chicago, Anaheim, New York, and Milwaukee. Schedule your next appointment today. Whether you need beef, veal, pork, or mutton, let us give you a hand at Jim's Abattoir. All right, what do you got for me this week?
Well, we touched on it a little bit earlier. The Oakland A's.
Oof.
The Oakland A's.
We've been beating up on them.
We have. Maybe a little bit unfairly, but in 55 games so far, they are 20-35. They are in last place of the AL West and really not an interesting team. Much. And like I said, I joked earlier, is anyone really watching that? I know that you went to the game pride once. And you and a mere 236,416 other people Oof. Have paid to wow, go pretty... to a game at the thing, which is 500,000 less than, I mean, they're than all of last year. All 82 teams, they only drew 700,000, just over 7,700, 1,430 all of last year. And quarter of the way through the season, they're really not doing too much better. And
yeah, they deserve it. It's pretty bad.
They I mean, what are you doing, Oakland? Make your team interesting to watch at the very least, even if the place where you have to go to watch them isn't a great place to go to watch a game.
Are they trying to major league it?
I think they are. I really do think they're trying to major league it. They want to get this deal done at the Howard's terminal, stadium deal that they've been trying to make a different place in Oakland to build a brand new beautiful state of the art right outside of downtown Oakland and with a view of San Francisco across the bay.
It would be an incredible spot.
But I mean, real estate deals like on this scale are notoriously difficult to get done in California, but if you throw enough money, and this guy has enough money to throw at the problem if he really wanted to, and he just wants to get up and move the team to Las Vegas. Or if none of those is true, why doesn't he just sell it? If he's not making money, if he doesn't think he can make money, just sell the team.
It's true.
Let someone else not make money with it and see what happens. It's perfectly acceptable. that's my ignoble award.
And there are plenty of candidates.
Yes. Now that Apple has officially ended the run of the iPod.
Yeah.
The Seattle Mariners playoff less streak has now lasted longer than the iPod. The last postseason game that the Mariners played was the day before the iPod.
Jeez, this is like 2001. Was announced.
Yeah, October 23rd in 2001, the iPod was officially unveiled by Apple as a new product. On the 22nd, the Mariners had lost Game 5 of the ALCS.
Brutal.
Sorry, Seattle fans, for bringing up such a sore subject, but it's there nonetheless. An interesting little fact that wanted to make sure it is out there in the zeitgeist because it just seems.
Just piling it on.
Just sad.
Pretty bad. That's pretty bad. Yeah, well, you know, hopefully they can turn it around. I've adopted the A's. I've lived here for the better part of two decades. Obviously, it will never be orange and black or orange and brown, whatever the hell your colors are. But the A's, I don't care about it's the American. Black.
Brown is in San Diego, man.
The A's, I've always just like, they're the A's, you can't hate them. Again, the tickets are cheaper, the beer is better, it's easier to get in and out, the tailgating is a real thing, it's fun going to Raider games there, I'm going to miss it, I know, it's true, I'm going to miss it.
The Raiders are gone too.
Get out of here and don't come back.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. Should we get into last week's trivia question?
Last episode might be the more accurate description.
Last week's trivia question.
You'll have to remind me. My memory doesn't go back as far as last week.
Last week's trivia question. Who is the only manager to win a division title with 5 different teams? Remember to email us your answers at baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Now, before I get into the responses, somebody had emailed us and asked, this is a while ago, and I forget, or suggested maybe we, and this would actually, now that it's been a while, it probably makes more sense. We start the show with the trivia question and then answer it at the end. What do you think about that?
I don't necessarily.
Instead of the cliffhanger.
I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but given our track record of most people missing the mark and getting these questions right, maybe there's something to it. We teach our loyal listeners a little something. Don't delay that gratification. From week to week, but We'll talk about it a little bit more.
All right.
It'll be under consideration.
Who was the only manager to win a division title with five different teams? They got Brian in Henderson. Henderson, Nevada says Buck Showalter.
Bucky Showalter.
That's a good one.
It is a good guess. He has managed quite a few teams, but not necessarily so successfully. That is an incorrect answer.
Okay, and then, what happened? There we go. And then we have, it looks like, at Flystar82 says, come on, it's got to be Dusty Baker. That sounds about right.
That is absolutely correct. It is Dusty Baker.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah, of course. Who, of course, five different teams, five different division titles, and zero rings.
Yes, he was closest in 2002, of course, being four outs away for that god-awful rally monkey got in the way and ruined it for everyone in Northern California.
Love me some rally monkey. Mm. The rally, I love how just the, you all of a sudden you got this far away look in your eye. Like his, like your soul was just momentarily reaped when thinking about that damned rally monkey.
Oh, it was.
I remember exactly where
so
I was during that game.
Yeah, I was. So do I.
Scott Spezio still haunts your dreams, I would imagine.
Less so since 2010, but yes.
I was going to say, yeah, 2010 had to have erased a few things. But Dusty Baker just couldn't get out of his own way, and now he still can't because he's hitching his wagon to the wrong star, almost literally here, I guess, in a sense. So shame on you, Dusty. How dare you? You could have been the greatest, but instead, you're just an astro. Yeah. You're a trash astro. That's right. Now, what do you got for me this week?
Well, this week, I'm going to talk about errors.
Errors, okay.
And streaks of consecutive games without committing an error.
Ooh.
For an individual player.
Yeah.
So the question is, what is the longest streak of a position player games without committing an error in MLB history?
Interesting. Now, this is very important. You know, in our league, we do errors as a negative stat for our batters, which I love and hate. You know, I love it when somebody else gets one, but I hate it when I get one.
Well, and you know, it's tricky because errors are one of those things. It's very hard to quantify with the analytics of how likely a player is to commit an error, how well a player does in the field. It's not easily quantified because so many different factors, but
it's definitely positional. So I mean, the first person I think of would be Arenado, but because he plays the hot corner, I'm sure he wins the Platinum Glove. He's never not won a Gold Glove, right? So, but even then, it still doesn't mean he's
got
not. Yeah,
so many opportunities per game.
Right.
You're probably gonna. I mean,
so it's got to be an outfielder.
I mean, even if your fielding percentage is, you know, .998, right. You know, there's you know, gonna be one or two screamers that are just gonna eat you up at third base.
No matter how good you are.
So
I'm thinking pitcher. Oh, so it can't be a pitcher. You said position player.
Position player, right?
Nor is it probably a pitcher. Probably not a pitcher anyway. Yeah,
and probably not a catcher because those two positions.
A lot of
the ball every single play.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. You have to. I mean. Opportunities per game, but it's still.
Is this a current streak? You're saying this is a current streak?
I'm not necessarily saying that. I'm not necessarily saying that.
Okay,
all
right.
That.
Yeah. No, right. Who has the longest consecutive games without an error? Email us baseballshowpodcast@gmail.com. Leave the answer on our Twitter or Podomatic comment. You know where to find us. You're already listening to us. You got it.
You should know the drill. Absolutely. But we're happy to be back and happy that you are still listening. And we promise to be back sooner rather than later.
From San Francisco, California, I am Adam Nelson.
And I am Samuel Paul. And remember, baseball is life. The rest, just details.
Go watch some baseball.